welcome to the FinTech Scaling Show. This podcast is sponsored by Scale Up Consulting, helping FinTech startups create a scalable organization to support an ever-increasing demand. When you're ready to grow, reach out to us at richard@scaleupconsulting.co. Now, over to the show with Richard Doty, founder and host.
Hey, what's up, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the FinTech Scaling Show, where we talk to world-class operators and we get their insights as to how they are scaling up not only their business, but also themselves as they head towards their ideal scene, right? I'm super excited to welcome Robin onto the show today. Robin is a RegTech, FinTech, financial service expert. He's been in the industry for a number of years. He's a founder. He's an executive. He's also worked in the corporate space. He works both in the APAC region and sort of Americas and EMEA. So super stoked, Robin, to welcome you onto the show today. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me, Richard. It's an honor and a privilege to be here.
Brilliant. And listen, mate, as I was getting ready for the show this week, and obviously our discussion is around leadership and control and, you know, communication, etc. I was thinking back to some examples of what a good leader looks like and what a good communicator looks like once they are able to both lead, communicate, and move their sort of their public to action. And nothing more than the word of Nelson Mandela rang through my brain. And people that listen to the show know that, you know, I met Nelson Mandela when I was 12 years old, but he had quite a profound impact on me. And I think it goes without saying that he didn't only have a profound impact on myself, but also on my country at that point in time, South Africa. And as a communicator and as a leader, I vividly remember him talking to a bunch of schoolboys who are, you know, 12 years old, and giving us a call to action, telling us at 12 years old, guys, you have the power to choose. You have the power to decide, and you have the power to act. And I feel that call to action spurred a nation into a direction and onto a path of reconciliation, and also inspired a group of youngsters to continue to have an affinity to a country, even to this day, right? And every day I see call to actions not being used and publics not being shown the door of what to do next. I'd like to know from you, as you are leading teams, as you are leading a public, how are you inspiring your team to action so you can go towards your next steps and also take your team and obviously your public along with you?
That's a great question. And wow, I prior to this show, I had no idea about this Nelson Mandela story that you just shared, Richard.
I thought I'd lob that in because it was such an inspirational thing for me. And I think a lot of people out there can relate to that. They know Nelson Mandela, they can relate to him. I mean, for him to still have an impact on my life as a leader is powerful because the way he communicated. And we need more communicators like that, right?
Sure. So look, let me take a step back here and share with you who's inspired me from the leadership perspective. And it's a little bit different to your story and certainly to many other stories out there. I mean, the only person I met that was famous growing up was Jet Li. And that was at a like a fan event. And, you know, I met him when I was 15 years old. That kind of had a profound impact on me because of the roles that he was playing on screen, which kind of takes us to who I grew up being inspired by. So one of the roles he played was this in a movie called Once Upon a Time in China, where he played Wong Fei Hong, who was a famous Chinese martial artist. And they made a movie about him. He was a master or a sifu in Cantonese, and he had a bunch of students. And so he had that leadership role about him. Being a geek growing up, I mean, I majored in mathematics, computer science, and management. Other inspiring people for me were like Optimus Prime from Transformers growing up. Captain Kirk and Captain Picard from Star Trek. But I like them. right. I'm a total nerd here, right? But taking that element and just putting it aside, if you actually watch a lot of these three things, right? Once Upon a Time in China, Transformers, and Star Trek, and the type of leadership that is displayed by these particular characters, it is inspiring. These are lessons that we can take with us into the professional world. So going back to your question here, I think it really depends on your overall setting, right? The type of, well, let's back up here and let's ask ourselves, what is leadership, right? I think it's really important to boil it down to the fundamentals here. My interpretation of leadership, the best person that term for me was my professor in business school, Steve Corio, rest in peace. He was a tremendous leader. So if anyone Googles this guy and looks him up, Steve Corio, C-O-R-I-O, and his background, fantastic sales leader. He was one of the head of IBM's sales program and for a while. And he taught the sales management class. And he told me, well, he told us in class that a manager makes you want to do something, but a leader makes you want to be somebody. That statement has just been something that has sat with me throughout my career, my life. I really feel that is one of those nuggets that we talked about that should definitely be shared amongst everyone. When it comes to being a leader, for me, there are two different elements. The type of leader you've got to be in a startup, you know, there's only 5-10 people in the company for the startups that I've put together anyway. It's very hands-on. You've got to be on the ground. You've got to wear multiple hats, et cetera, et cetera. Versus the type of leader you have to be in a larger organization, like, for example, during my time at Refinitiv, Thomson Reuters, or any of those larger organizations, you have to be more, I think the term is presidential, right? It's a lot more hands-off. It's a lot more delegating, but you have to be the person that figurehead for sending those messages across, right? Or communicating to your firm. That's how you do it. In terms of that inspiring, that, like I said, make you want to be somebody element, I guess a lot of it is that communication element, right? Showing that you're willing to listen, engage, no matter who you are, right? Whether you're that guy on the ground or whether you're that presidential figure, right? I think it's important to be listening. If we go back to very simple sales 101 training, right? Was it they say selling is not telling? So your ability to ask open-ended questions versus closed-ended questions, I think, is important. And so I do that a lot with my team. I'll ask an open-ended question, let them talk. I will boil down the challenges or what they're happy with or what have you, just summarize all of that. Yeah. And then play that back to them in bullet point form and saying, so you're saying this is what's happening and this is what we're doing well. And then and so we get that affirmation and know what to do after. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I like it. And I think defining leadership, I think you're completely correct. And we need to go maybe a step further. It's just as, you know, your examples and, you know, my examples of Mandela, there's an autonomy and flexibility that leaders give, even if you are 5 or 10 man startup, and definitely when you know, a slightly larger organization, you have to give your team, if it is your team internally, the autonomy and flexibility to rise up to the challenge, right? Because if in a startup, if you don't give your team the autonomy and flexibility to rise up to the challenge, you yourself, Mr. Founder or Mr., you know, CRO or whatever it is, are going to be wearing too many hats, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, the point of leadership is obviously firstly leading in a direction, making certain you have good control, but also allowing others to build up their knowledge and wear the hats that maybe you can't at a point in time. I think autonomy and flexibility is important. And the other point here is making certain in all your communication, because I see it time and time again, but in all your communication, you give people a door to open. So what is that door to open? Okay, you've given a great keynote speech, maybe you've given a cool podcast interview, and maybe even it's as simple as you've had a really good team meeting. But what is that door? What is that next step that gets people up and starts moving them in the direction you want to move them in, right? What's that call to action? how do you evoke them to really push open that door and walk through? Well, you have to obviously tell them, guys, this is the door. This is the color of the door. There's a handle in it. Open it up. Because when you start doing that, right, I think you also, you start controlling, in some ways, controlling the conversation and controlling the chatter. I'd like to know from you how you have worked through different companies, different situations, to make certain that there is always a bridge, let's call it a bridge or a door that, that people can walk through to make certain that they go that next 1% or you sort of moving towards your sort of ideal scene.
Sure. I mean, to use your example of a great meeting, right? One thing I've always tried to pull out of that meeting is what I mentioned earlier, right? Yeah, the summary part. So everyone's clear as to what was discussed and what was decided, some action items, and then to assign those action items to various members of the team and so that they have ownership. Now, I don't believe in this whole slave driving mentality, like I'm going to give you task A, you're going to be held accountable for it, blah, 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 blah. I would rather empower that person, say, look, I'm going to give you this task. This is what I think you can achieve with it. If you have any challenges, please do not hesitate to revert back to me. I can work with you on it or find someone to work with you on it if needs be. But I want to make sure that you are successful and that we manage to achieve this because this task is important and this is why it's important. You know, Simon Sinek, right? Always break down the why. And these are the metrics or numbers that go with that particular task. Yeah. But it's a we thing, not a you thing, if that makes sense.
I think on a team basis, I think you hit the nail on the head. Give them the support, give them the autonomy, the flexibility, empower your team members to wear that hat. And, you know, if they make a mistake, okay, fine. As long as they're learning, they continue to grow. And to jump out of a team situation and look at the public, because, you know, we are out there as founders and executives. And let's be honest with ourselves. We also want to be able to, you know, sell some stuff, right? And I know selling is a bit of a, you know, no one likes to sell anymore. And I get it. But we do have to have the ability and confidence and knowledge to be able to at least promote our product and all our services to our publics in a way that attracts ready to buy customers on a consistent basis, right? Well, you know, I do it myself and I work with my clients. We use a simple method where we make certain that in each instance, we have an attention getting opening. We don't talk about our product or services because no one cares about that. We talk about the problem and we talk about how we can get towards a desired outcome. And then just as Mandela and, you know, your examples, that they had a call to action at the end. We have a call to action at the end. So there's a door, there's a bridge to go through that people can start engaging with you. And in that instance, because the public is difficult to control, in that instance, you start bringing an element of control into a conversation and into, when I say conversation, because a conversation can be a lot of things. It can be on LinkedIn. It can be on YouTube. It can be on email. But you start bringing that element of controlling, which allows you to then move forward and get these interested parties into a different environment and most probably a one-on-one situation where you can have a proper conversation with them. And while there are other ways that you have maybe used or other strategies or tactics that you have implemented to move your public along the path to a good conversation around helping them?
Sure. A couple of things on that. I mean, the first is vision, right? Who are you? What do you stand for? I think that is so important. So if I take the example of Napier, Thomson Reuters, Refinitiv, even my startups, right? They all revolved around the financial crime space. And for me, when I look at this space and I look at myself in this space, what do I stand for in it is really, really important. And one thing that I did was, number one, learn up as much about the industry as possible. Number two, actually do a lot of doing, if that makes sense.
Yeah, right. You got to build to learn.
Show that I am actively involved to the extent where if I take like one of the financial crimes, one thing that's considered money laundering, i.e. financial crime, is the result of human trafficking, especially my part of the world, right? I'm based in Singapore, yeah. And look at some of the stuff that's happening in the surrounding companies. It's pretty bad, right? There's tons of things happening.
That's so shocking.
Yeah. So to really, really immerse myself, my wife and I, and this is before we were even married and with kids, we would go to Cambodia and actually help out, take part in some of the volunteering to help out the victims. Because I really wanted to be on the ground and really understand the industry as best as I could. From an education perspective, I try and upskill myself as much as possible. Now, I haven't had a chance to do it as much in the past 6 months. There's just been a lot going on in my life. But there was an extent up to the early part of this year where I was taking a LinkedIn learning course. I set myself a goal to do one a week. And that's just not in the financial crime space. That's in a whole bunch of other things. So if you go to my LinkedIn, you'll see the data, right, in terms of the courses I've been taking and how I've been trying to improve myself. Because you can always get better. Some of the best leaders I've worked for in the past have been sportsmen or sportswomen, right? Very applicable to like sales or to trading or to these kinds of roles where you can never peak. You could always get better. So you can always sell more stuff. You could always produce a higher return if you're a trader. You can never peak and you can always do better and better. And so I guess it doesn't help that one of my other inspirations has been the Rocky movies as well. We're going to talk about a lot of movies here today, Richard.
Yeah, movies are good.
so that whole Rocky mentality, right, of being the underdog and just pushing yourself further and further and further to get better and better and better, I think is really important as well. That being said, the other element that I think is important is credibility. And so one thing I've tried to stay true to throughout my career is to express that I know what I know and I know what I don't know. I know what I'm good at and I know what I'm not good at. And so if you were to ask me to talk about what it's like being, for example, a compliance officer or an AML officer and give training on these topics like compliance or AML, I don't think I have the credibility to do it, right? Because I've never been in that role. I've never been there, done that, bought the t-shirt. You know what I'm saying? So just stay true to yourself, I think, is another important element career-wise and leadership-wise as well.
Yeah, I think you touched on a few salient points there. One is, you know, vision, purpose, and credibility. And all of these, I guess, elements or components mixed together will allow you to come across as empathetic. There's no game you have to play, right? Just be yourself. We're not going out there and we're not we're not a used car salesman. We're out there actually trying to make a difference in people's lives. You know, you mentioned here some shocking stuff around trafficking and what have you, and actually taking the time out of your life to go figure out, you know, how you can impact and make a better world over there. And if that comes across when you're talking to a public where obviously you're trying to sell a product and or a service, there's a direct connection and direct correlation, because these folk will automatically want to lean into you because they can see that, you know, there's more to it than the tin. There's this knowledge, there's this person, and there's thing that they actually want to engage with, right?
Totally agree. And yeah, like I said, it's all about what you stand for, right? And who you are. That's to me is a major, major differentiator. And I noticed as well, you were doing that summarizing what I just said in bullet points. So that's great, by the way.
Oh, thank you. No, because it is important. I mean, those things, you know, vision, purpose, and credibility, we can bubble them up and we can have different episodes on that. But, you know, they are important they're not just words, right? They should lead you as a founder and executive. They should lead you somewhere. And they should lead you clearly to making certain your public is called to action, is acting on everything that you are saying. If you're able to do that, you know, I think you can have a real big impact in not only your life, because it's, you know, ultimately it's not only about us, but it's about your ecosystem that you're trying to impact. You can have a massive impact if you take time out, as you're saying, to go through that and think through it, get the knowledge, get the experience, and really drive your purpose.
And I just want to add as well. Yeah, I mean, let's take a step back here. We're here on the a podcast about fintech, right? And if you look at the financial industry versus the technology industry, and we're bringing it together into fintech, right? And when we talk about, I mean, this ultimately does boil down to leadership. And you know, I'm going to say something here, which, again, this is just me being real, me being Robin Lee, me
be yourself.
Being who I am.
Yeah, yeah. But if, that's what we're doing.
If the financial industry had all the right answers and was doing all the right things, which is impossible, but if they were, there would be no need for the fintech industry in the first place,
yeah.
Right? And so in my very humble opinion, and this is just coming from someone who's worked both in Silicon Valley and Wall Street, I think that's as fintech as it gets, right? If you look at the culture of the technology industry, a lot of it comes back to this. You can love them or hate them, but if you look at, you know, someone like Mark Zuckerberg, who's out there talking about connecting the world and bringing their loved ones together, he's not talking about, I want to sell, you know, advertising dollars and what have you.
Analogy.
He's talking about the higher purpose, the higher, broader, meaningful message, right? If you look at like Steve Jobs, right? Steve Jobs was always talking about, you've got to start with the customer first and work backwards. Yeah. Customers, user experience Nazi, right? When it comes to making sure that the products do what they do in the most user-friendly manner and easiest manner. Or even if you look at Elon Musk, right? This guy's gone even one step further and wants to back up the human. He wants to save the world. He wants to back up the human race on another planet, just in case something drastic was to happen to the current planet we're on, right? I don't see anyone in the financial industry on this kind of a level, right? Talking this kind of a language or being as prominent from a leadership perspective, right?
But it's an interesting point. And again, the analogies are, you know, purpose and making certain that people are following you, making certain that, or trying to make certain that you have that following, you consistently getting your audience to act. In each of these instances we've spoken about today, Jobs, you know, Musk, Bezos, you know, love him or hate him, Zuckerberg, love him or hate him, Mandela, love him. I have to say that. They all have a purpose. They all had a greater purpose. You know, one was to unite a whole country. Obviously, Elon Musk wants to do something slightly different, but you know, great purpose, great vision, great leadership, and they had a following. But you know, the same has to be said for those out there that are going out and creating new financial products and creating a new financial ecosystem. We need to be able to show people your purpose. And then, you know, as I said, we've already said it a number of times, people will follow that. Talk about the problems, get people towards understanding that problem and show them that you can move them towards the desired state and do that on a daily basis. I mean, stop worrying about, you know, my ARR and all of this stuff, which I know is really important. Don't get me wrong. Growth of the company is really important. But if you look at these 1% little incrementals you can make, i.e. maybe you have a YouTube channel, maybe you have a LinkedIn presence and you post on these two channels and you're imparting your knowledge onto these two channels, which allows your audit, your public to scale up their knowledge and at a point in time will allow them to lean into you when they actually want to buy. And I think this is something that, again, is what we all should be doing. We all should be wanting to share our knowledge so that an entire industry can move together in the direction it should be moving towards, right?
Yeah. I mean, you want to talk about how you can really, really take this to a, not another level, but a significant level. When I left my gig to go launch my first startup, so I was in Singapore. I just left the role that I was in then and decided I was going to do a startup. Yeah. And I had what I call my Batman Begins moment. So I don't even remember Batman Begins, where he, before he becomes Batman, he goes to that to some country, climbs up the mountain, collects the flower and faces his fears and does whatever. Then recognize that he was scared of bats, but faced that whole, that toxin gas or whatever made him see loads of bats and he just ended up embracing it. So I had a similar experience with that. And what I decided to do was go back to Silicon Valley. So I hadn't, at that point, I hadn't lived in Silicon Valley for like 3-4 years, decided to reconnect with many of the executives that I'd met either when I was working in the Valley or when I was on Wall Street. So when I was on Wall Street, I was an analyst covering Silicon Valley companies, right? So I was privileged to have met many of the famous executives that we see and hear about today. And one of my sessions was around Salesforce.com. And I was really inspired by Marc Benioff and his story. And one of the tips that I managed to pick up from him was this concept of integrated philanthropy. And so what I did with my first startup, which was also in the financial crime space, was I followed his model of 1-1-1, but I flipped it to 5-5-5. So 5% of my equity was owned by a charity. 5% of my employees' time was spent working on a charitable cause. And 5% of our net income, we didn't have any in the beginning, and neither did he, right? So you said, just do it. So went to a charitable cause as well. And what we did in my first startup was we made sure that charitable cause was aligned to our industry. And it was actually a charity that focused on the combating of human trafficking. And this is shortly after I'd done that bit of voluntary work that I mentioned earlier, right? So I was really, really moved by it. And so we set the company up in that manner, with an integrated philanthropy model. And when we got acquired, the charity got paid out for that as a result as well, right? So we felt we were doing a lot of good.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah, there's some great examples of this. I think one that comes to my mind is the ex-CEO of Unilever has gone out and created something very similar, right? It's business for good. It's called, what's it called? Imagine One. And similar vein to you, they go out there and they partner up with businesses. Mm-hmm. And this is more around sort of the climate crisis, right? Mm-hmm. And they're wanting to make certain that, you know, X amount of money or investment or knowledge is put into creating a better climate and better sort of ecosystem for us to live in and our the generations beyond us to live in. So, you know, a super, super interesting topic and super insightful to make that sort of jump and that leap in a different direction, right? And what did you, out of that experience, what did you, you know, as an individual, what did you learn from it?
Oh, man. I mean, okay, so this was 2013. So in 2013, fintech wasn't even an industry back then. Yeah. RegTech wasn't even an industry back then. And startups were certainly not viewed as sexy as they are today, especially in Singapore, right? You were viewed as the guy that couldn't get a corporate job back then, right? And I don't know, maybe it's from my Wall Street days where we were scrutinizing companies left, right, and center, so whether we were going to invest in them or not. I decided to not just run my startup ramen style, but even my lifestyle as well. So I went from living in a pretty nice condominium in the center of town to a room in a HDB flat in the outskirts. I was paying myself $500 a month. So that's about, I don't know, £350, £400 a month. And eating hawker food every day. I had a kick scooter, not even an electric scooter like they got now, right? This is a kick scooter. And I was running around basically the central business district, just trying to sell my offerings to compliance officers left, right, and center. So it was tough, man. It was really, really tough. But, you know, I wanted to put myself into position, you know, and again, I've been very inspired by media, by whatever. So you hear the stories of how Sylvester Stallone lived in his car for 2 weeks, sold his dog, and then bought his dog back when he was, you know, when he'd made it, quote unquote. Yeah. You hear about Jennifer Lopez and how she had three jobs while she was a fly girl on In Living Color. So I figured, you know, if I can back myself into the corner, right? When you're backed up in the corner, that's when the magic cup happens. That's when you have to out-innovate your way out of the situation that you're in. Then I can make something of this company and the people within it. That was how I was, my whole approach to it was, which is very different to now, right? We're in an environment where raising money is like really, really celebrated. I've heard about startup founders that are raising money and just going off and buying houses or flying around on private jets and et cetera, et cetera. I don't know. It's not necessarily something that I fully subscribe to. Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying that you should go what I went through or even worse still. But what one thing we learned on Wall Street when we took external money was to, what my boss at the time was saying to me then was respect the capital. And so if someone gives you money, you need to be accountable for it and respect it and respect them as well, right?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I always say my business, also with my clients, it's important. Rainy days never too far away, right? Mm-hmm. So you need to respect is one thing, but you also need to plan accordingly, right? So you need to have different funds. You need to have a rainy day fund, and you need to have a fund that, you know, is going after different projects, and obviously a fund that is continuing with business as usual. Because when that rainy day does come, you know, you don't want to be in a situation where you are backtracking and having to sell things off. You want to be able to, you know, go on and push through it, right? So don't go out and spend it all on maybe expensive projects or initiatives. You know, think through what your core strategy is. I think it's the 80-20-10 rule, right? So that comes to mind. And that's out of Silicon Valley. You know, make certain that 80% of your effort is spent on your current business, your current clients. 20% is on your future projects, and the 10% is maybe put away for a rainy day, right? So always consistently control that capital, control that flow, and don't ever overextend yourself, even if you are growing, even if you are in sort of that hyper growth mode.
Yeah, I'm not out there having like $10 lattes, you know. I mean, I'll have them with customers, right? I think again, that's an investment, right? When you're there with customers, but when I'm out by myself and what have you, blowing money on that, like,
yeah, it's not,
you know, or 5-star Michelin restaurant, it doesn't really align, you know.
I hear what you're saying. And, you know, to wrap up the sort of the leadership conversation before we get into the flash round's a bit of fun. You mentioned some advice, and you mentioned, you know, obviously, you know, some great sort of nuggets and insights during the show. But what's for listeners out there and who are growing their business and who are trailblazing or starting to really expand, or even who are just starting to build and step through the process? What's the one or two bits of wisdom that you can impart that you think will, you know, really help them move forward?
Are you referring to like newfound startup?
Yeah, startups, scale-ups.
Scale-ups, okay. I would definitely say that whole stay true to yourself.
Yeah.
You know, it helps with the credibility, the integrity, from the credibility and integrity perspective. I would also say that, I don't know, to have a learning mindset, I think that's really, really important as well. So another inspiration of mine is Bruce Lee, right? And Bruce Lee didn't just learn one style of martial arts. He learned everything, took what was applicable to him, i.e. figured out what he was good at and what he was not good at and what was suitable for him, and then created his own style. Again, I have the credibility to talk about programming because I started my career as a developer, right? But am I a good programmer? Absolutely not. But I've got the credibility to talk to it because I've been there and I've done it, right? Yeah. So I would say learn and do as much as possible. And then last but not least is that whole mindset of resilience, of being able to, because it's never, and I'm sure you've heard this through many of your podcasts, right? It's never always smooth sailings. You're going to have your ups and downs. When you go through those downs, the pressure can really, really get to you. But at the same time, to me, that's where the magic happens and where you have to innovate your way out. If you view them as, so when you do go through your downs, rather than viewing them as downs and you know, ending up down in the dumps about it, view it as the challenge and take that problem-solving mentality to try and figure out how you're going to address that challenge and get over that hump.
Yeah, listen, some great nuggets of insight there. And challenges and downs and losses are part of the journey, right? You know, you mentioned acquire knowledge, and tell me, whether Andre Agassi or even Roger Federer were able to hit the ball over the net when they first picked up a racket. And if you say yes, you know, I'll say liar. You know, try and try again until you're able to get towards your grand slam in this instance.
I think that whole journey is really important as well, right? Because look, getting to the top is tough, But even when you do get to the top, I think it's tougher staying at the top. Again, apologies for the pop culture references here, but if you go back to the Rocky movies, right? He didn't even win the first one, right? He didn't even win the first one. Yeah. And then you have to go back to the drawing board, train up again, and then became world champion in the second one. And in the third one, he got complacent, right? He got complacent, and then Mr. T came in and took him down. Everything after is, well, maybe the sixth one is okay, but everything after is, it goes into comic book territory, right? But I think the story of 1-3 is really, really important and resonates so much with startups, leadership, life, right?
Yeah. And listen, 100% am in tune with that. And now we go into the flash round. The flash round is a bit of fun. So we end the show on a high and everyone walks away with a smile. What is the flash round? Your flash round is I ask you three questions and just give me your response. And then you ask me a question, maybe a question you want to ask me. And I give you my response. So let's do it. The first one I'm going to ask you is, you worked on Wall Street, very interesting. What is the most famous Silicon Valley executive that you have met and worked with?
I got to hang out with Sheryl Sandberg once. But I'd say it's a tie between Sheryl Sandberg and maybe Tim Cook. So I got to meet Tim Cook at a couple of conferences. This is when he was COO, though, not CEO of Apple.
He's still an executive. Pretty cool. That's a good one. Then where do you, other than movies, where do you get your inspiration from?
Media in general, right? Whether it's books, music. So I grew up listening to a lot of hip hop when hip hop had meaning, and you want to talk empowerment, right? Look at the stuff that like Public Enemy did back in the day. Wow. And people around me, right? I think it really is important that everyone recognizes that you are the company that you keep, right? And I grew up in Tottenham, right? And I definitely didn't want to surround myself with some of the characters I met. You know, I grew up in my corporate life because a lot of them are either dead or, you know, you know, involved in unscrupulous activities, shall we say. So those three things.
Okay, and the last one, a bit of fun here. Dim sum or fish and chips?
That's a tough one. It depends on what type of dim sum. So I'll go with fish and chips. I don't get to eat it as often in Singapore.
Okay, awesome. That's a good one. And then, you know, over to you. What question do you have for me?
Sure. I mean, I would love to learn how you got the show started and what inspired you to get this going. How do you become a podcast host?
Yeah, cool. I've had a journey, I put it this way, you know, that started when I was met Nelson Mandela to now. And that journey was, the big thing was to have an impact on as many people's lives as I could do, right? And that's led me down a path that's been windy, a lot of different types of experiences. And it's ended up me setting up my business, Scale of Consulting. And then, you know, realizing during that, I was having a lot of one-on-one interactions like we're having right now, but I wanted to have a bigger impact on the industry I was working in, and also a bigger impact on society. So I was thinking, okay, well, what can I do? How can I get a medium? How can I get a voice out there that allows me to really engage and then also educate others out there? And I thought, there we go. Let me do a podcast. Let me set up a podcast where I really focus on what I think is quite an interesting industry, financial services, and how folk are scaling up businesses to basically create a new financial ecosystem, which is obviously going to impact a lot of people's lives across, if not everyone's lives across the globe. So I set up the FinTech Scaling Show to do that and really talk to founders, executives such as yourself, to get their insights, good, the bad, and the ugly, as to how they're scaling up, how they're taking their purpose towards their public and also towards their world. And I just got on with it and went live with my first show a couple of years ago. And ever since have been producing. Now I think I'm doing five shows a week and go live with, you know, roughly between two and three a week. So yeah, a long journey.
So two follow-up questions. Number one, why start with the podcast? Was it just happened to be the most popular medium at the time? And then number two would be, what's next? Yeah. You could branch out into, I don't know, YouTube TV shows or something like that.
So why podcasting? Podcasting for me is a tool that allows you to create really impactful relationships, right? That's one thing. I'm a people's person. I go out there, I want to help people, and it's allowed me to create these and engage and connect with different people and create relationships. That's the podcast side of things. And the other thing on podcasting, it's a medium that travels across multiple airwaves, right? You can do video, you can do audio, and then, you know, there's lots of different things you can do off the back of that. So that's why I chose it as a medium to kick off with. So what next is, well, you know, interesting you say that. So we are in the process of, well, I'll say we, I am in the process of launching a book, which is going to be released in the next, before Christmas. And that's a culmination of my 2 years worth of podcasting and talking to great guests around the world and getting their insights. And what we're doing is we're launching that, you know, now, and to give people meaningful takeaways that they can really pick up and use to sort of move towards their ideal scene. So that's the big thing that's coming out soon. And there's also a new virtual group that I'm in the process of setting up and launching in 2022 called the Mastermind of Scaling Up. So excited to, you know, invite you, Robin, and other execs into that world.
Yeah. So you're not doing anything on the metaverse yet?
That's next. No, I'm not. Yeah. Right. No, not yet. Listen, we start small. We're going to sort it out. It's going to be fun, right? I mean, we're here to, listen, mate, like everything, we're here to make an impact, here to educate and help folk through their journey, right? And that's what we're doing with the FinTech Scaling Show. And that's, I can see the community we built up over time is just incredible. You know, more of the same next year. That's sort of my motto.
Fantastic.
Okay, mate. So, and listen, as we wrap up the show, how can people, if they want to connect and reach out to you, how can they do that?
Sure, you can reach out to me on LinkedIn. So, if you look me up, Robin Lee, you can catch me on my email as well. So, robin.andrew.lee@gmail.com.
Okay, brilliant. And all those, you know, insights and obviously Robin's contact details will be in the show notes. So no need to rewind and try jot that down. It'll all be there for everyone to pick up and click on and obviously email and or connect. For those of you that haven't yet subscribed to my podcast channel, now is the time to do that. Go to www.scaleupconsulting.co.uk/media, sign up and get the latest releases on a weekly basis from experts such as Robin. And let's go on this journey together. Robin, again, awesome to have you on the show today and looking forward to your success. Awesome, mate.
Appreciate it. Thank you, sir. All right. Have a great day. Goodbye.